Welcome to the latest MediNews podcast. I'm Desmond Fernandez, a former senior lecturer in human geography at Montfort University in the UK, who specialises in genocide studies, human rights concerns, and an examination of the manner in which othered communities are criminalised by state-linked mechanisms and bodies. I've co-authored or authored several books, articles and reports that have focused on Baloch and Kurdish human rights concerns. It is with great pleasure today that MediNews welcomes Fayz Baloch, the editor of Balochwana News, The Other Side of the Story. Welcome, Fayz. Now, Balochwana News, The Other Side of the Story, is an online news portal that has been reporting about human rights concerns in Balochistan since 2005. It states that its aim is to engage and inform human rights groups around the world and the international community in its widest sense about what the Baloch people are going through at the hands of Iranian and Pakistani security forces. The stories of Balochistan are not often published in the international press, as Pakistan and Iran have made it difficult for the press to report about the Balochistan issue. Foreign journalists are not granted the necessary press permission to report from Balochistan. If they get in, they're harassed and intimidated and often kicked out. Local journalists, meanwhile, are either abducted or target killed, mostly by government mercenaries for reporting human rights abuses against the Baloch people. Because of the media blackout, they're getting away with the most horrible human rights abuses against the Baloch people. We at Balochwana News aim to tell the other side of the story to the world that has long been ignored and needs the immediate attention of the international community, media and human rights organisations. And it's really for this reason that we're speaking to Fayz today, the editor of Balochwana News, hopefully so that we can hear more about these hidden stories or hidden issues which widely tend not to be reported by the international mainstream media. Today's podcast specifically focuses on recent human rights violations of Baloch fuel and cross-border traders, or socked bars as they're commonly referred to, and Baloch political prisoners in Iran. Parallels will also be drawn between the way in which Baloch socked bars and Baloch political prisoners and Kurdish kolbars, that is Kurdish cross-border traders, also referred to as kolbas or kolbaran, and Kurdish political prisoners have been and are being targeted in Iran. As Balochwana News recently reported, angry protesters took to the streets in the city of Saravan in Iran, protesting against the killing and injuring of more than 20 Baloch fuel traders in western Balochistan by Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, the IRGC, on the 22nd of February. So that's really just less than 3 months ago. According to reports, the IRGC opened fire indiscriminately on a peaceful and unarmed demonstration by Baloch fuel traders who had gathered to demand the opening of the Goldsmith Line that divides western Balochistan in Iran from eastern Balochistan in Pakistan to enable them to trade safely. The border crossing had reportedly been inexplicably closed for some time. The Iranian authorities and forces, instead of meeting their demands or listening to the socked bars, opened fire on the unarmed fuel traders, reportedly killing 10 people instantly. Several more died in hospital from their injuries. A shutterdown strike was called by Baloch communities on Wednesday, the 24th of February, in protest. As Balochwana News reported, the leader of Darul Uloom and the Imam of Juma al-e-Sunnat Balochistan, Maulana Abdul Hamid, condemned the killing of the Baloch traders by Iranian forces and said such measures were a total violation of the law. The Baloch youth are forced to work as fuel carriers due to unemployment. This business is not a crime, nor does it fall into the category of smuggling. Thousands of families are doing this business to run their homes, he said. A spokesperson for the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights in Geneva on the 5th of March this year also stated, and I quote, "In Iran, we condemn use of force violations in recent weeks by the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, the IRGC, and state security forces against unarmed fuel couriers and protesters belonging to the Baloch minority, which has reportedly led to the killing of at least 12 individuals, including at least two minors. The series of violent events and unrest began on the 22nd of February, when Revolutionary Guards are alleged to have shot and killed at least 10 fuel couriers, couriers known as Soktabars in Sistan and Balochistan province at the border with Pakistan, after a two-day standoff triggered by the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps blocking the road to the city of Sariban. The killings triggered demonstrations in several cities across the province, during which the IRGC and security forces fired lethal ammunition at protesters and bystanders, end quote. The UN spokesperson added, and I quote, according to some estimates, which we are unable to confirm, as many as 23 people may have been killed in all. Precise verification of the death toll has been made more difficult following disruptions of local media data networks. We are deeply concerned by the widespread shutdown of the internet across several cities in Sistan and Balochistan province, with the apparent purpose of preventing access to information about what is happening there, end quote. Noting the lethal targeting that takes place by Iranian border officials and forces against both Kurdish Kolbars and Baluch Soktabars, the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights spokesperson stated in the same communication, and I quote, we deplore the systematic, intentional use of lethal force by Iranian border officials, especially against border couriers from the Kurdish and Baluch minorities, and call for immediate measures to end the impunity that perpetuates this practice. During 2020, a total of 59 Kurdish couriers were reported to have been killed by border officials in provinces in the northwest of Iran. We call for prompt, impartial, and full investigations into all such killings and accountability for those found to be responsible for unlawful use of force, leading to death or serious injury. Victims and their families have the right to truth and redress. Under international human rights standards, firearms should only be used to defend against the imminent threat of death or serious injury, and intentional lethal use of firearms is only justified when strictly unavoidable to protect life, end quote. Now, many Kurds will understand the terror and trauma that affects marginalized and targeted communities in this way, and the Baluch Soktabars as well, who provide the economic lifeblood of Baluch communities in the region. Kurds have their own Kolbars who are shot and targeted this way by Iranian and Turkish state forces, as Media News and Hengal Organization for Human Rights have been reporting in depth. Some of you may also have been introduced to the harsh world in which Kolbars live through Iranian director Barman Gobadi's cult film, A Time for Drunken Horses, which was co-winner of the Camera d'Or Award at the Cannes Film Festival in 2000. Peter Bradshaw from The Guardian at the time had described the film as a very remarkable film, a blazingly passionate spiritual bulletin from a contemporary frontline of almost unimaginable hardship. Kurdish groups, we should note, have condemned this recent massacre of Baluch Soktabars. The Kurdish human rights organization Hengal strongly condemned the murder of innocent Baluch fuel workers by the Iranian forces, stating that the use of force by Iran's armed troops against unarmed civilians was unacceptable and deplorable. It has also been documented the way in which Kurdish Kolbars continue to be targeted. It has also documented the way in which they've been targeted. And I think we can see the impunity with which Iranian forces operate here. According to Hengal, on the 8th of February this year, Iranian armed forces directly shot a Kurdish tradesman on Salmaskoy Road and killed him. On Saturday, the 27th of February, Iranian Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps forces opened fire on a group of Kolbars with shotguns, and as a result, a young Kolbar was injured in the head. Again, on the 10th of March, the Iranian Border Guard forces opened fire on a group of Kolbars and severely wounded one of them. On the morning of the 13th of March, the Iranian Border Guard forces opened fire on a group of Kolbars and severely wounded a Kolbar. On the 16th of March, the Iranian border guards again fired upon a group of Kolbars, injuring two. On Nevroz, the 21st of March, a Kolbar was wounded by direct fire from the Iranian border guard forces. Hengal additionally reported that a young Kolbar was chased by an Iranian lieutenant whilst crossing the Sardar on the 17th of April this year. Consequently, he fell from a cliff and lost his life. On the 28th of April, the Iranian border guard forces, Hengal reported again, opened fire on a group of Kolbars in the border heights of the Tate Mountains and injured one. Hengor indeed reported that during April this year, at least 18 Kolbars and tradesmen were killed or wounded on the borders of Iranian Kurdistan, 78% of whom were shot by direct fire from the Iranian armed forces. Two Kolbars reportedly lost their lives, and 16 Kolbars and tradesmen were injured. One of the Kolbars who lost his life was reportedly also tortured by the Turkish armed forces. The Association of Human Rights in Kurdistan, Geneva, additionally confirms that the indiscriminate and blind killing of Kurdish Kolbaran takes place in blatant violation of international obligations. Border security forces involved in indiscriminate and blind killings do not even respect the Iranian domestic laws, which authorize the use of lethal force only as a last resort. 75 border couriers known as Kolbar were killed in 2018, with another 177 individuals injured at the border due to reasons such as shooting and landmine explosions, amongst others. Moreover, many Kolbaran were arrested and their goods were confiscated by the authorities. In addition, hundreds of horses belonging to them were shot dead, the association noted, adding, as the 26-year-old Taha Ghaffari, Iran's champion in track and field, who has also received medals in Asia, told the state-run Fars News in an interview, Kolbari, that is being a Kolbar, is an obligation to feed your family and sustain their livelihood. Taha Ghaffari is still working as a Kolbar in Iranian Kurdistan in order to support his family. And again, according to the 1st of March 2021 findings by the Kurdistan Human Rights Network, last year, and I quote, 40 Kolbars were shot dead by the Iranian military forces and six were killed by the shooting on the Turkish border forces. Six other Kolbars also lost their lives due to car accidents, drowning in rivers, landmine explosions and falling from border heights. Furthermore, three Kurdish tradesmen were killed on the roads as a result of shootings by law enforcement officers. At least 147 Kolbars were wounded by the shootings of the Iranian and Turkish military forces. 15 Kolbars were injured in car accidents and natural disasters, end quote. Many car accidents, as we'll see a bit later, are reported to have suspiciously taken place. The Diplomat magazine reported on this desperate plight of the Baluch living in Iran almost 10 years ago. I particularly cite from that report's findings because it highlights the way in which the Baluch have been marginalized for decades, and certainly the situation reported by it almost 10 years ago has hardly changed today for the Baluch economically and politically in terms of the marginalized status in Iran. Now I quote from that Diplomat article, Baluchistan is divided today between Iran, Pakistan, and Afghanistan. The region has the lowest per capita income in Iran, with almost 80% of the Baluch people living below the poverty line by some estimates. The average life expectancy, meanwhile, is at least 8 years lower than the national average, whilst infant mortality rates are the highest in the country. It also results, suggests Professor Brasig, from Tehran's policy of assimilation. Annexation of the region to Iran in 1928 brought terrible episodes of repression, caused a mass exodus of the local population, and saw virtually every Baluch place name changed to a Persian one, Professor Taj Mohammad Brasig says, end quote. It is in these dire economic circumstances in which Baluch, as with Kurdish communities, find themselves. The Baluch Soktbars provide an economic lifeline to many Baluch communities, yet face this kind of Iranian state-directed terror. As said, the Soktbars are unarmed, and they just tend to be attacked, shot, and targeted in the ways we've outlined. The Baluch leader and head of the Free Baluchistan movement referred to the recent killing of Baluch Soktbars by the IRGC as an act of economic terrorism against the Baluch people. Iranian authorities have also been closing border crossings, it would seem, to deliberately choke the economic lifeline that the Soktbar traders provide to Baluch communities, even as the Iranian authorities reportedly use this strategy to facilitate their own covert drugs and fuel trading. Just over 2 weeks ago, Baluchwana News reported that, and I quote, after closing the borders of Baluchistan and stranding people at the border crossings, the Revolutionary Guards easily transport drugs. The IRGC's Razak plan which was implemented to regulate the Baluch fuel couriers, has been forgotten in less than 2 months, and the border of Baluchistan has been completely shut to the Baluch people. However, the RGC and its forces are now using the same Baluchistan border for their narcotic transportation business. It is pertinent to remember that in February 2021, the IRGC had shot dead and wounded at least 37 Baluch fuel traders who had gathered to protest against the border closure. On the other hand, the Pakistani forces have also closed down the Baluchistan border at the Goldsmith Line that divides Iranian-occupied Baluchistan from Pakistan-occupied Baluchistan. The closure of the Goldsmith Line and artificial border is a joint plan of Iranian and Pakistan forces to take over the fuel trading and also transport narcotics. Hence, the border forces of Iran and Pakistan have closed down the border for the general public in the name of security measures so they can continue with their drug trafficking, end quote. Now, even as Baluch Soft Bar and Kurdish Coal Bars have been targeted by Iranian authorities in this manner, further economically marginalizing both communities, political repression has continued, and Baluch and Kurdish political prisoners have been targeted with the death penalty, unfair trials, disappearances, and torture. In March 2019, the Unrepresented Nations and People's Organization, UNPO, submitted a report jointly with the Ahwaz Human Rights Organization, the Baluchistan Human Rights Group, the Komala Party of Iranian Kurdistan, and the Democratic Party of Iranian Kurdistan for the Universal Periodic Review Procedure at the Human Rights Council at the United Nations. The joint report stated, in reference to the situation of the Baluch and the Kurds in Iran, that, and I quote, "The indigenous Baluch people, the majority of whom reside in the Baluchistan region in southeast Iran, have experienced vast marginalization since the division of their nation by the British and Persian empires. Successive government-led demographic manipulations have aimed at reducing the Baluch community to a minority in their own region, and discrimination has been institutionalized. Because of these policies, the province is one of Iran's poorest, and the Baluch are effectively becoming a minority in their homeland. Also, in the Baluchistan region, repression and physical violence have become an everyday reality, with the Baluch being systematically subjected to persecution, imprisonment, torture, and arbitrary executions. The Kurdish region is located in the northwest region of Iran and holds a majority Kurdish population. Some of the main issues faced by Iran's Kurds include political persecution and marginalization. The Kurdish regions are neglected by the Iranian government and suffer military repression and economic hardship, leading to increasing levels of poverty and growing inequality. Forced evictions and a lack of access to housing have led many to resort to living in precarious and unsafe conditions. Kurds also suffer from cultural, religious, and political repression. They currently make up the majority of Iran's political prisoners of conscience," end quote. Last year, the International Federation for Human Rights, that's FEHD, the second oldest international human rights organization worldwide, published a report, "FEHD Defends All Human Rights, Civil, Political, Economic, Social, and Cultural, as contained in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights." Now, last year's FEHD report concluded, and again I quote, "The death penalty in Iran has often been used against members of Iran's ethnic communities and religious minorities, especially political cases based on morabeh, spreading corruption on earth, insurrection, and other vaguely worded crimes," end quote. As FEHD clarifies, the morabeh offence has existed in various versions of the Islamic Penal Code since the early 1980s. Although there was never a mention of God in the relevant provisions of the Islamic Penal Code, judges frequently issued death sentences for warring against God or fighting God. With regard to the Baluch, Kurds, and other ethnic groups, FEHD concluded that, and I quote again, "The death penalty in Iran has also been used against members of some of the country's ethnic communities, such as Kurds, Arabs, and Baluch, and religious minorities such as Sunni Muslims, Baha'is, and followers of the Shia Ali Haq sect." These groups have been subjected to extensive and protracted discrimination with regard to their political, civic, economic, social and cultural rights, which has led to resentment towards the central government. Rather than addressing these grievances, the Iranian authorities have responded with heavy-handed measures, including the implementation of the death penalty on a large scale, end quote. In terms of how executions have been justified and projected, Feed noted that many drug-related executions have claimed the lives of poor and marginalized individuals and members of ethnic communities, in particular the Kurds and the Baluch. In January last year, in this interim report, in his interim report on the human rights situation in Iran, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said that Kurds charged with national security offences represented nearly half of all political prisoners in Iran. On the 2nd of August 2016, 20 people were executed in Rajah Shah prison. They were amongst a group of 36 Kurdish Sunni death row prisoners who the authorities described as convicts of a terrorist splinter group. The prisoners rejected all allegations of their involvement in violence and armed activities and said that they'd been detained for their religious beliefs, organizing and taking part in religious meetings and distributing religious material. In 2015, a total of 13 members of ethnic communities and religious minorities who faced charges of spreading corruption on earth and or morabeh in connection with political and security-related offences were among at least 40 people executed in different cities. They included at least 11 Kurds who were executed after being convicted of politically motivated charges. They all faced charges of morabeh. On the 25th and 26th of October 2013, two Kurdish political prisoners convicted of morabeh were executed in West Azerbaijan province. On the 26th of October that same year, 16 Baluch prisoners were hastily executed in Zahedan, Sistan and Baluchistan province after an armed attack by Baluch insurgents the previous day. The executions took place about 10 to 12 hours after the attack. Several of the prisoners could not have committed the crime of which they were accused, as they had been in detention since early 2010. That is, they had been in detention whilst the crime they were accused of occurred outside the prisons they were in. Authorities had previously used retaliatory mass executions against Baluch prisoners in December 2010, when 11 Baluch prisoners were executed, end quote. Feed again, as early as 2013, had concluded that in particular the Arabs in South Khuzestan province, the Baluchis in the southeast and the Kurds in western Iran have been disproportionately targeted for executions. Many political prisoners, human rights defenders point out, have also been falsely charged with drugs trading in order to smear and criminalize them and in many cases subsequently execute them. On the 21st of September 2018, Kozar Nowzad, writing for Kurdistan 24, noted that Hengel had reported that, and I quote, "In the past 6 months, Iran has hanged 40 Iranian Kurds and sentenced just under a dozen other activists to death," end quote. On the 3rd of February this year, that's less than 3 months ago, 36 civil society and human rights organizations, including UNPO, Amnesty International, Article 19, several Baluch and Kurdistan groups, the Kurdistan Human Rights in Geneva group, and Minority Rights Group International called, and I quote, "to the urgent attention of the international community to an ongoing wave of arbitrary arrests, incommunicado detention and enforced disappearances by the Iranian authorities, targeting scores of people from Iran's disadvantaged Kurdish minority. The undersigned organizations are seriously concerned that those detained are at risk of torture and other ill treatment aimed at extracting forced confessions, and that these may later be used in grossly unfair trials for spurious national security-related offences. According to information gathered from informed sources, since the 6th of January this year until the 3rd of February, in other words, in less than a month, at least 96 individuals from Iran's Kurdish minority, including civil society activists, labour rights activists, environmentalists, writers, university students and formerly imprisoned political activists, as well as individuals with no known history of activism, have been arrested by the intelligence unit off Iran's Revolutionary Guards or Ministry of Intelligence agents, at times in a violent manner. The arrests have taken place in at least 19 cities. According to informed sources, most of the arrests have been carried out without the authorities presenting an arrest warrant to those detained. As of the 2nd of February 2021, seven of those arrested had been released, in three cases on bail and in four cases unconditionally, but the rest remain in detention without access to their families and lawyers, and there are widespread fears that the wave of arbitrary arrests is continuing. According to information obtained from informed sources, of the 89 individuals who remain detained, at least 40 have been and are being subjected to enforced disappearance, and the authorities are refusing to reveal any information about their fate and whereabouts to their families, end quote. Hengel further confirms that during March this year, at least 22 Kurdish citizens were arrested by the Iranian security forces on charges of political, civil activities and participation in Nevroz celebrations. This targeting is ongoing. Hengel reported that on the 13th of April this year, that's less than 2 weeks ago, Iranian security forces arrested two Kurdish citizens in the city of Parle and transferred them to an unknown location. Two Kurdish citizens were sentenced to a total of 13 years in prison by the Iranian judiciary for participating in the November 2019 protests. Hengel, in an earlier report, had noted how Kurdish political prisoners who were charged in participation in those November 2019 protests had also been flogged as part of their punishment. On the 12th of April, a Kurdish prisoner was executed for alleged drug-related crimes. On the 16th of April, Iranian intelligence forces reportedly raided the house of a prominent Kurdish athlete and arrested him without any warrant or legal documents. He was reportedly transferred to an unknown location. 4 days after his arrest, his fate and whereabouts remained unknown, reported Hengel. And in the same way, in the Baluch context, on the 15th of January, Baluchwana News reported that in the previous month alone, at least 11 Baluch youths were reportedly executed at Dozap Central Prison. On the 25th of January this year, Baluchwana News reported, and I quote, "It is important to note that in the last 34 days, at least 20 Baluch citizens have been executed in Dozap Central Prison." On the 4th of February, UN human rights experts, including four United Nations special rapporteurs and three members of the Working Group on Enforced or Involuntary Disappearances, condemned the hanging of Javed Deghan, a Baluchi. They reportedly stated that they feared that a disturbing recent increase in executions of Baluch minority prisoners in Iran would continue. "We are very disturbed by this trend of executions against Baluch minority prisoners on death row and by practices of enforced disappearance of persons belonging to minorities. We call on the Islamic Republic of Iran to immediately halt these executions and to overturn all death sentences ordered, which are contrary to international human rights law," they stated. Concerning the execution of Javed Deghan, they stated, and I quote, "The concerns raised in this case of serious fair trial violations, including lack of an effective right of appeal and a torture-induced forced confession, mean that the Iranian government's implementation of his death sentence amounts to an arbitrary execution," end quote. Now, it is in this context that we proceeded with this podcast to really discuss these types of issues. And thank you so much. We welcome you here today, Faiz. As editor of Baluchwana News, can you please comment on the situation facing Baluch soft bars and political prisons in Iran, also drawing upon any parallels you can see with the Kurdish situation? And once again, thank you for joining us on this program. Faiz?
Thank you, Des, for inviting me, and I would like to also thank the viewers and listeners of Median News and for giving me this opportunity. The situation, as we explained in the report, has been not really favorable for the Baluch since Iran or the Persia occupied Balochistan. We call it occupied, but Iran call it a province of Iran. Obviously, there's a conflict between Baluch and Iran, which has a history, has been going on for a long time. but we call it occupied Balochistan. So Balochistan, as you quoted from the report from Diplomat, is currently divided between Iran, Pakistan, and Afghanistan. So obviously our focus today will be the Iranian occupied Balochistan, or the western part of Balochistan, especially the recent incidents which took place on 22nd of February. These are people, we call them Sokhtbar, or fuel carriers or fuel transporters. They do not only carry or transport fuel, they carry other basic necessity things like washing powders, blankets, and things like this, basically to support their families. They are forced by the state, the Iranian state, to do this business, this risky business. It is very risky. I don't know if you've seen the videos or not. If anybody does a little bit research on the Baloch Sokhtbars or the Baloch fuel traders, there are many videos you will see. These people are basically taking big risks. Sometimes they even die during these, because they go through mountains, they cross rivers, they walk for miles, hungry, thirsty. So it's not something they are doing out of a happiness, or they are doing it for fun. They are doing it because they are living below poverty in Iranian occupied Balochistan, because the state is not providing them living that they should be, they are entitled to. That is why the Baloch have these grievances against the Iranian state. That is why the Baloch have been asking for their rights, their independence from Iran, because they live there as not even third-class citizens. So what happened on 22nd of February is they closed the border. They call it the border between Iran and Pakistan, but we call it the Goldsmith Line. It's an artificial line which was drawn by British to divide Balochistan. So this, they fenced it now recently. They are making fences, and now on the Pakistan side as well, but Iran has fenced it long ago. So there's only one gate that people can cross. Otherwise, they cannot cross from Iranian part of Balochistan to Pakistan part of Balochistan.
I see.
So when the border was closed, these people waited there for so many days, I think even weeks. They ran out of food, they ran out of water, they had nothing basically for their survival. Then they protested against the behavior of the ICRG, or the Islamic Revolutionary Guard of Islamic, the Iranian forces. So the ICRG, instead of giving them any facilities or facilitating their demands or even providing them food or water, opened fire at them. And then people obviously started running for their lives. Then what happened, beside those fence on the border, they have digged big and deep ditches as well. So when people were running, because of the firing, many of them even fell in those ditches, and they were injured as well. So what reports we received is at least 37 people were killed and injured on that day, on that single day. And people were not allowed to take the dead bodies of those and the injured to the hospitals. So this is again old tradition of the Iranian forces. From the past experience, we know that when they chase people, these Sokhtbars, when they chase them, they open fire at them. Because they are carrying fuel, their cars, they catch fire. And when the Iranian sees now the car or whatever vehicle they are using, it caught fire, and they know that there are people inside those vehicles, and they are burning, they are at risk, then what they do, they turn away. They do not go near or try to put off the fire or try to save those people, take them out, take them to the hospital. They just let them burn and die there. This is.
I would say that's something very similar for the Kurdish coal bars in Iran and Turkey. That again, there are reports that when they shoot them, they just stand surrounding them, waiting for them to die. And sometimes that can take hours. And obviously, they stop anyone trying to come and assist them. So it's a really terrible, terrible situation there of actually watching people die and not doing anything to help them after they've actually started, you know, after they shot them or shot the trucks, as you say. Do continue.
Yes, exactly. And this is because we are facing the same states. They have the same policy, the same repression, and the same anger and the same hatred against the Kurds and the Baloch. And our situation, the Baloch situation, is pretty similar to the Kurdish situation. They are divided between many countries, and we are divided between three countries at least, Iran, Pakistan, and Afghanistan. But the two states that are fundamentalist or pro-religion states, that are Pakistan and Iran, they have similar policies. As I was telling you, as you mentioned as well about the Kurds, they shot people and let them die, or even watch them die. At some 8 points, we received reports that they shot people, even children and women, and then let them die. And other thing they do is they put these nails on the road. When the cars are going, their tires burst and they overturn. And once the car is overturned, they just drive away, the Iranian forces, when they are on the road watching them. When the car is overturned, they know the car is overturned. Somebody could be killed, somebody could be injured, or God knows what will happen to them. If there's nobody in the middle of the night, they just drive away. They let them, if they are injured, they are dead, or what happened to them, they don't care. So this is the level of inhumanity and repression and oppression the Baloch and the Kurds are facing in Iran and in Turkey as well. Now, the situation of the Sohbars and the Kolbars is almost similar. The Kolbars are also carrying things from one country to another country.
Yeah.
Obviously, they are also forced. They won't be doing it for fun. They are also forced because the states do not facilitate them. They don't have jobs. And surprisingly, many of the people who are doing this business are young people. They are educated people. I was reading a report a few weeks ago. There are Baloch who are doing this business of software. They are graduated from universities. They are graduated from colleges. They are very clever, like talented students who could be, if they were in another country, if they were in a democratic country, they could have a high position, or they could have a better living, they could have a better job. But in Iran, or even in Pakistan for that matter, the Baloch have no life. Just to give you an example, that there is a large community of Baloch who have been living in Gulf countries. And they are on high positions in Gulf countries. They are in military, they are working in embassies, they have in financial sector and education sector. They are educated because they have this opportunity to use their education. So what I'm trying to explain is that if a Baloch who can get education and have a good life, have a better job in a third country, whether it's in Europe, whether it's in Gulf countries, why can't they have the same position or the same job in Iran or in Pakistan? Because they are repressed, because they are not allowed to reach to that destination where they want to reach. So it is systematically keeping the Baloch backward, keeping the Baloch destitute for a living. So they can just keep on struggling to support their families or to support themselves to make the ends meet, instead of focusing on their struggle, instead of focusing on the rights of their people.
So in many ways, that's institutional discrimination at a whole variety of levels to really crush possibilities or opportunities of gainful employment and safe employment. I don't know if you could also just comment on the situation of prisoners, because that seems to have also reached a critical point. But I mean, I know Baluch prisoners, as with Kurdish political prisoners, are often executed in Iran for really calling for basic rights, the most basic of rights. I don't know if you can just comment on those recent issues.
Yes, thank you, Des. Yes, again, the situation is the same for the Kurds and for the Baloch in Iran. They ask for their basic rights, they will be arrested, they will be imprisoned for so many years. And then on basis of some trumped up charges, they will be executed. In Iran, for the Baloch, there are two excuses. One is that they are drug dealers. Basically, these Sokhtbars who are working or doing this job for their survival, to support their families, to support themselves, they call them drug dealers. And the other charge is security issues, but they call it Mohrabe. Mohrabe is something like enmity with God, or you are doing something against. Yes. You are doing
something also used against the Kurds, as you said.
Yes, the same situation. They use it against the Kurds, they use it against the Baloch, they use it even against the Arabs who are living, the Ahwazi Arabs who are living in Iran. So it's the biggest weapon they have. They say you are an enemy of God, and as if Iran is the protector of God and everybody else is the enemy of the God. God can protect itself. It doesn't need Iran's protection. So basically, these are political cases. So even recently, they executed one Baloch who was a graduate from university. And the cases against him were that he was trying to incite people against Iran. So that was a political charge. But mostly they don't. Mostly they are killed on the trumped up charges. And recently, in the last report, we reported it was 24 Baloch. And after that, they killed five others. So now it reached to nearly 30 in the last few months. So 30 Baloch they have executed in different prisons. And two Baloch they executed even after the Amnesty International had appealed for their execution to be halted. But they don't listen to anybody, neither Amnesty International, United Nations, or anybody else. They just do whatever they want, because they know these Amnesty International or UN or whoever, they just issue statements. They don't do anything practically. So they know that these organizations are, it's very unfortunate to say, but these organizations are also toothless. They cannot do anything.
Yeah, and as you say, with the UN and other groups, there is no intervention which actually has meaningfully been employed to protect the Baloch. What about Baloch journalists and Baloch organizations in Iran? Obviously, I'm assuming they cannot even publicly protest, because they'd obviously be accused of acting against God or acting against the state, I take it. So I take it that is all strongly repressed as well. If you can just comment on that briefly.
Yes, journalism in Iran, especially the Baloch journalists or for Baloch people, is almost, or you can say, next to impossible. They cannot report openly from there. There are few journalists or activists like ourselves who are outside Iran and who can manage to get reports from within Iran through different resources, through different sources, through different mediums we can use directly or indirectly, or from a third country, so we can get reports what is happening there. But actually reporting from inside Iranian occupied Baluchistan for a journalist will be, especially for the Baloch or the Kurdish issue or the Arabs issue, will be like a suicidal. Somebody is inviting death for themselves. But again, thanks to all those activists or all those silent heroes who are still taking risks and trying to make videos, trying to spread the word of mouth, and then it reaches to activists who are a bit more free than the ones in Iran, like us, in Europe or elsewhere. At least we know what is happening there, and we can report that and tell the world about the Iranian state repression against our people back there.
Okay, well, thank you very much for that update. As said, I hope to invite yourself and Shahrazad Karimzadeh to a future podcast session where I hope you all can actually talk about these issues of the partition of Balochistan, which we've seen in many ways mirrors, which the Kurds are very familiar with, the partition of Kurdistan, where you're looking at classic colonies or colonies being created, and obviously in the age of the modern nation state, new nation states being created through imperialist interventions, and hence in many ways that has resulted in the desperate human rights situation which the Baloch, as with the Kurds and others, face. Thank you very much, Faiz. I really appreciate your contribution today, and I'm sure the listeners will really appreciate that as well. Thank you very much, and as I said, we hope to speak to you again. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for inviting me. Thanks.